like all my Swiftie after these
party
people.
Was really fun. I went to New York. I did release party things. It was a good time. I had pizza and bagels.
Pizza.
I had New York pizza.
Oh, yeah, you sent the video and it was so good.
I had New York pizza with the pepperonis that look like little cups. They were really good. And then I had bagels and I had pasta and wine and it was a really good time. And then the release party was really good. They had it, like, spread out well with in like the waves of people, so it wasn't so crowded everywhere, but they had like a theory table, so I wrote theories on there. We did some interviews. I'm writing things down. And then there was a lot of photo ops, like a lot of like
love that
posters and backdrops and things like that too, which was really cool. There was tote bags they were giving out, so there was giveaways. I did not win the giveaway, that's okay. But it was a really good time. Yeah, it was fun. 10 out of 10. Would recommend. Hopefully I'll be back in November of next year for when the third book comes out. But that's not why we're here. No. We're here to talk about Crescent City. So welcome, guys, to the Goodish Girls. And my name is Dallas.
And I'm Madison.
And we are talking Crescent City. We are almost to the end.
Yeah.
We're almost done with this book. We are close. We're very close. I am excited because I think that Crescent City book one was one of the best books from the series for sure. Like, I really enjoyed it, and I love how she brought things like back together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think out of the three books, book one is my favorite.
I would agree. The only reason that I think book three, and this might be a hot take, but I don't care, book three might fight for the place is because, and this is somewhat spoiler, so if you don't want that, cover your ears, is because I wanted ending of some sort for Rune. And I feel like Rune didn't get that in book one, and I think book three gave Rune an opportunity to do so.
Yes. I think because book one is just like, do we talk about Bryce and Hunt a bunch? Yes, but I think book one truly is Bryce and Danica's story.
Yes, agreed.
So, unfortunately, there was no room for Rune. Plus, anytime Rune, like, tried to redeem himself, Bryce is like,
Rose in the doghouse.
You're canceled. I'm going to delete your number now. Bye.
Yeah, she's like, actually, go fuck yourself.
Poor guy.
I know. I feel a little bad.
But it's fine, because we'll get more
in book three, he is out of said doghouse and is on his own journey.
And book two, he has his own little adventure.
That's true. Book two, he does have his own little adventure,
I'm so things excited be happening. To go over that.
It is what it is. So, though, we are covering chapters 81 through 86 today. In chapter 81, we know that everything is literally in chaos. And everyone at the summit just watched and literally felt the death of Micah because Bryce put a bullet in his brain. So, he's dead. Goodbye. The next part after that is hilarious. Because we're getting the description of the bullet literally going through Micah's head and everyone's faces in that moment. And then all of a sudden we see Bryce with Danica's sword. So it like switches very quickly. But the funny part was that if you guys remember, this sword has been missing, quote unquote, for like 2 years, right? Danica left it in the closet at the gallery before she died. And the look on Sabine's face, I would have paid good ass money to see that look on her face, because all of this traumatic stuff is happening on all of these TVs at the summit. Bryce is just like laying down the law, and then all of a sudden she's like, ah, my fucking sword, are you serious? I died. Because every time Sabine shows up, she's like, where's my sword? Where's my sword?
Sabine's just a problem.
She is a problem, which is why I would have paid money to literally look at her face when she saw Bryce with the sword. And she then used this sword to cut Micah into many, many pieces. and all of his blood rose into the air as it defied gravity, which I thought was wild. I was like, that's a really interesting way to do that. So it's all over the place. And
it's very alphabet of him.
Yes. It's me. Yeah. So wild. And at this point as well, if you guys remember, the synth is still in Bryce's body and it might be taking over. But we as readers were the only ones who knew the liquid that she took out of the safe when she took the bullet for the Godslayer. Because if you guys remember, there was an antidote for that and she put it in the safe next to that bullet. So she took it out and she drank it. So thankfully, she took the antidote. When they finally figured out, Hypaxia is like stoked. She's like, oh, hell yeah. My like, little my shit worked. Queen. Yes. She's like, my project. So, at this point, and this is, like, one of the best scenes in Crescent City for me. And I feel like that's an opinion across the board. Like, I don't know a lot of people who are like, this scene wasn't great. Or, like, this scene wasn't, like, one of the best ones in book one. Right, because then she takes gasoline and she pours it all over Micah's body and she lights him on fire. And then she takes out a vacuum cleaner and she literally vacuums up his ashes. R.I.P.
I think one of my friends from college in her dorm room, she literally had a poster. I forgot what the poster said. I think it might have even been, like, Bryce's cleaning service, and I had a photo of Bryce with a Hoover vacuuming up ashes. Oh, that's
cute.
And I was like, that's iconic. Because that was before I read Crescent City, and she was like, you should read the series.
She's not wrong. There is the Instagram handle, like, Lunathian's It Girl. Have you seen her online?
Yeah, because she liked one of my posts.
She's so funny. She, like, cosplays as Bryce a lot. And so she does a really good job.
Yeah, because she liked one of my posts. And then I feel like I tagged her something else. Or no, I think I shared one of her posts on my stories. And then we chatted for a little bit. But no, she's super nice. And I like her content. She's really funny.
She's launching like a lip line, like a makeup line.
Mm-hmm.
Which is exciting. She tried to get Dyson to do a brand deal with her.
That's what I reposted on my story. So and she's like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. I'm like, I got you, girl.
I want to be that one day where, like, we like the Goodish Girls like a post, and then someone's like,
the Goodish Girls like do Dyson.
No, we liked somebody's. Dyson's expensive.
Exactly. Cannot afford Dyson. That Dyson sponsor.
Yeah, Dyson, if you actually want to sponsor me with a curling iron. So, back to it. We're getting distracted. Back to it. So, Chapter 82, so the ox finally arrives, right? Because we're like, Rune. The Rune's like, go, ox, go to them. And they finally show up super late. Like, I don't know what they were doing. And she was like, oh, it was a gas explosion. And there's no issue. And you can't come inside. I've got it handled. And they were like, ah, okay. The authorities here in this planet are terrible.
Not good. The 33rd... At least in Crescent City. Maybe elsewhere they're good.
Maybe but elsewhere.
Crescent City, don't.
They're not doing a good job.
No.
Oh, it's just knock, knock, knock. Hello, we were sent here by our leader. And she's like, just a literal gas explosion. I'm fine. Okay, have a great day. I'm like, what? No. Damn. So, anyways, they do. They leave. It's fine. And Bryce finally gets a moment to, like, take a breath. And Jessica actually texted her. And she texts her, are you all right? Which I thought, I know it's small, I know it's just a text message, but I think it says a lot about Jessica, right? Because, like, it just isn't her style. So I think that she was truly worried. Mm-hmm. And we do get full confirmation that the Nox and Lahaba are truly gone. The books, though, are in good condition, and they're fine because of the spells surrounding and protecting them. And I'm glad that they gave confirmation, because part of me, when I was reading, was like, maybe there's a way to bring Lahaba back. Maybe we could light a match. Maybe baby Lahaba. I don't know. Put a candle down there. Like, no, she's gone, unfortunately. That was the only thing that I truly hated about the series was that death, but I understand that, like, that means that Sarah did a good job because I'm still hung up years later on this death.
Yeah, there's definitely some other books where I'm like, I think could have, like, would it have hurt in the moment for this character to die? Absolutely, but I think it would have been more impactful if they were to have gotten.
Yeah. Is literally crushed me. It was terrible. So the next thing that I thought was really funny is, so like Bryce is like thinking about all the repercussions, right? And she's like thinking to herself, she's like, ah, at least a portal didn't open. And I cackled. I was like, yeah, girl. That's right. That's right. Because we know that a portal obviously did open, right? So it's still in the chapters, it's still kind of like bouncing back and forth, right? So she's like, haha, at least a portal didn't open. And then we go back to the summit, and Sandriel looks like shit, right? She's like in shock. And so while she's like trying to gather her life in the moment, or like her thoughts and feelings, Rune and Hunt were finally able to talk. And so the question now is, if Sandriel will be crowned the new Archangel because Micah is gone, and if so, is getting orders to eliminate Bryce on her list? Right? So, like, Micah is gone. Who is going to be the next leading Archangel? And then, like, are we going to actually just say goodbye to Bryce? But Queen Hypaxia then sat next to Hunt and mentioned there are bigger issues to attend to at the moment because Micah's plan to use the horn actually did open a portal, as we know. So, haha, we did definitely open a portal. Hee hee. So, and these are like small, like quick chapters. So, chapter 83 that we're going into, we know the Heartgate's magic is now being used to fuel this like huge portal. And it's not from unknown worlds like Micah's goal was, right? He was like, I want to open portals from unknown worlds. But it actually opened a portal straight to hell itself. So good job, Micah. You failed again. You suck even in the afterlife. And it gets worse. Like every time something happens, it's like, and but. And but like all these things, right? So it's like the typical last 100 pages-ish of Sarah J. Maas's books. Where like the last 100 pages is like the worst thing ever in the best way. And so not only is the Heartgate magic opened into like a portal, every single gate in the city is now opened into a portal because they all hold magic. So that's amazing. So Bryce is like, okay, I gotta go, actually. So thankfully, Syrinx we know is tucked into the apartment in a little blanket and he has
Thank
food and
goodness.
water and everything's fine. Bryce loads up all of her weapons and we're on the road. She's going. So we also learn that bomb shelters are opening and people are funneling inside, right? They have 1 hour before they close automatically, but they do have the opportunity to close them early if necessary. So we learn that Juniper is safe. So thankfully she's like checked off of the list. I'm not gonna lie, I wasn't actually thinking about Juniper at all in this chapter.
I feel like with everything
Is that
going
bad?
on, my main concern was Syrinx, Bryce, because also, like, we don't. The last mention we have of Juniper is not even from Juniper herself, but is right before Fury goes to the summit, and she's like, maybe. She, like, loosely hints at the fact that her and Juniper are in a relationship, but, like, Bryce hasn't spoken to Juniper, I don't think, since Juniper got on to Bryce for not attending
Yeah,
the dance
she like
class
came over to
to
the
God.
house.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't know a lot about Juniper in this book, like specifically. So I, when she was like, Juniper, I was like, oh, okay. Good job, Juniper. And so she's there, she's safe. Now we know. But she also tells Bryce something really important, which is that they're trying to close the doors early and they're not letting any humans in, which I thought was really shitty. So Bryce is super pissed. So we pivot back then to the summit, right? So again, we're bouncing back and forth. So back at the summit, everyone's being contacted, and Hunt is looking around and notes on the screens that the most dangerous demons are coming out of these portals. And if we remember, like, he has experience in which demons are what, because he hunted them and killed them. So he's like, oh, those are literally the worst that we could possibly think of coming out of there. Amazing. And then another issue that is coming up, that came up as well, is that the ox was ordered by Sabine to protect the richest of the city who are already safe inside, instead of helping those who needed protection because of the protocols. So I thought it was really, I thought Sarah did this in such an interesting way that, like, when you think about, and this is kind of, maybe this is kind of sad, I don't know. When you think about, like, the end of the world or, like, something bad happening, like, who will make it to the bomb shelters? Who will our ox protect? Right? Like, who will be left out? Who will not be allowed in? Will there be people not allowed in? So it makes me, like, stress just a smidge. I'm like, oh no, that's actually really scary. So I think it's normally in a fantasy book. Like, I'm in it, right? I'm not on Earth. I'm actually in that land. Like, I'm in fantasy Feyland now. I don't exist as a human. I'm now Fey. In this one, it's so different because it is all the fantasy Fey things that we love, but it's also modern world, modern time, right? Because, like, there's cell phones and cars and all, and there's humans and all the, and you're like, I connect with this too much, and now it's too real, and I'm a little uncomfortable. So I don't know. I don't know if you felt the same, or, like, maybe it's just me overthinking it. There's only room for one overthinker in this podcast right now, as you say.
Yeah, I don't. I this was back in the day whenever I didn't overthink, so I don't think my brain went there. But I feel like
Fair.
maybe if I, like, read it for the first time today, then maybe I would have, like, had crazy theories, probably, that just didn't even happen.
It's possible. It was just, it just kind of made me think. I was like, ah, oh, this is really not great, like, organization. And so, like, even Rune is attempting to pull his forces and put them in a more helpful place, but he's overruled by the Autumn King again due to protocols. So that was really unhelpful. So Therion also had trouble getting his people to help, but he did command them at least to take as many as they could back down below to safety. So at least he had, like, a little bit of a win. So the 33rd are out, and they are, like, being killed everywhere, and they have now been sent to the old square. So I thought this was kind of fitting because they kind of, again, they suck. So, like, 33rd to get their asses kicked in the old square are doing their thing, and they're doing a bad job. I don't know why they suck so bad. I don't know why Micah was did not choose to, like, train his army.
I mean, if you think about it, during the whole entire case, they sucked, but that's because Micah was behind it, so maybe he wanted them to suck on purpose. And he didn't do all the big brain things. Because maybe Micah, if he did not kill Danica in the pack, maybe he would have had them check the tattoo parlor that was mentioned, I think, 3 or 4 times before they mention it in, like, the final chapters, whenever we learn all the
But,
things.
and part of me says yes, but then part of me says, like, he didn't know that the tattoo even was a part of it until almost the end. That they should attack that tattoo shop way in the beginning. Right? He was like, I didn't know that the horn was on you, in you,
Until she took off the necklace.
until she have the necklace. That tattoo shop was missed the entire book.
Yeah. They get
I
on my nerves.
like your thought process for it. Like, I like that you're like, maybe they don't. Like, I get it. But at the same time, I think maybe they just are the worst.
Mean, I don't think they're great, but I think
No,
they're
they're
not
definitely
good
not
on
great by any
purpose.
means. Yeah. So Ethan also finally comes back into this story because he's been gone for a while. And the den is surrounded by these demons. And they're literally out of options at this point. So portals are open. No one is helping each other. It's like everyone for themselves. And Hypaxia finally jumps in and she orders everyone to literally suit up and move out, she says. They're going to the city. They're going to start helping people. But honestly, it would be too late, right? Like, by the time they get there, it's, what are they going to do? But she says she would rather die a hero like Bryce than be a coward. Because we know now that Bryce was currently racing down the street towards the portals, screaming at everyone to take shelter and get inside as she's taking down demon after demon after demon. So she is like laying down the law, right? And Declan, we know, is still able to keep her on the screens the whole time and kind of figure out where she was headed so everyone can still watch her. And where was she headed? The freaking meadows. Because that's where the humans are and they needed protection and they needed her. Good on you, Bryce.
The whole ending of the book, so much stress.
So much stress.
Ugh. But, anywho, chapter 84, we are continuing. Hunt is watching as Bryce heads into the city to deal with the monsters, and as he's watching the feed, he overhears Hypaxia talking on the phone and saying that apparently the witch's brooms, armory, helicopters, and cars have all been destroyed by Micah before he set out for Bryce so that no one would be able to stop him from opening the portals. Which sucks, but also, like, big brain move on Micah. At this, Fury does mention, however, that she has a helicopter on standby that they could use. So as they're waiting for that helicopter, Deck is still doing all of the tech things, making sure that they're keeping eyes on Bryce, but also kind of helping patching everyone in also one line, so that way everyone is familiar with what everyone is doing to help mitigate the situation. So at this point, Deck then puts Sabine's phone call on, with essentially her calls to all the packs of the Ox, and connects it so that everyone can hear. And Sabine orders the pack to hold their ground in Moonwood and in Firo. But Hunt yells at her to send the wolves to the old square to help. But Sabine replies that there are no wolves left in the old square. The Prime, bless his heart, stirs from his chair and points a finger at the monitor and says one wolf remains in the old square, and everyone looks to where he is pointing at Bryce fighting her way through the carnage. And Sabine's kind of just like, Dad, that's Danico's sword that you're sensing. It's not, like, it's not Bryce. But the Prime stands his ground, and he says, a wolf, a true wolf.
That scene hit me right in the fucking heart.
Yes. And the Prime also just gives me anxiety because I'm just like, is he okay? Because every now and then it's, oh my gosh, there's something I'm trying to think of. There's like a movie or a TV show where there's like this really old character, and every now and then like people are like, is he dead? And then he just does like a really dramatic gasp and they're like, oh, he's fine.
Oh, that, oh, people kind of stress me out like that. When I'm old, I'm going to do that to scare kids.
No, don't.
I'm gonna be like, they're gonna be like, is Grandma okay? I'm like, ha!
That's awful. Oh my gosh. I'm like pre-stressed for your future grandchildren.
When you're old, you can do what you want. That's the rule. I live my life. Now I get to be a menace.
Oh my gosh. I'm pre-stressing. For your future grandchildren.
You should also... I'll do it to all the kids. It won't just be them.
Everyone will be stressed.
Everybody. Stress them all.
Oh, my Lanta.
But everybody's gonna be like, Mom, again? Stop! It's my dream. I just made it up right now, and I'm gonna do it.
That is your new dream, starting today. Yes.
We're going to be podcasting at, like, 84 years old, and I'd be like, guess what I did today? I scared the neighbor kids down the road.
Oh, my gosh. I truly think I always send clips of, like, the old guys from the Muppets to me and my cousin. Like, that's
oh, yes.
Ads. Just the hecklers.
Yes. Get off my lawn. Amazing. It's going to be great. I'm going to run people over with my grocery carts.
Don't be that old person.
Just their ankles. Just a little bit.
Oh my gosh.
Remind I'm going to be an keep, absolute...
I'm going to keep like a perimeter and be like, don't get in that zone. She's going to get you.
In your little walker. We know you better watch out. She's coming.
It's like a little bell so people always know when you're around.
Yes.
He's getting better close. Move out.
Old Lady D's coming through. I want to be Dee Dee when I'm old, so.
That's what my Aunt Debbie is for my cousin. She's Dee Dee.
That's my dream as well. And my initials are DD, so I feel like it's fair.
That makes sense. That's valid.
So when I don't know what age I have to hit to be DD. Like, yeah. Maybe when I become a grandma, then I become Grandma DD.
Yeah, or just DD.
Yeah. When I'm... I don't want to say a certain age. I don't want to get anybody mad. I'm going to say an age. They're going to be like, oh my God. Because you were like, say an age that correlates with something, and someone's like, I'm that age! I'm not old! But
people can become grandparents and parents at any age.
That's true. Okay, so when I become a grandmother, a grandmama, I will be grandma, I will be Dee Dee from then on.
Grandmother Dee Dee.
And then I can start running people over with my grocery cart. Carry on. I'm gonna do it.
We're gonna leave that violence for some more fictional violence. But as everyone is watching the monitors of everything going down, Hunt asks Isaiah for his phone, which Isaiah hands over without question, and Hunt calls the Viper Queen to remind her that she still owes him a favor. As Hunt follows Rune and Fury to her helicopter, Jezebel tells them that Bryce is calling. So they're like, hold on. I need to hear this first. The call's patched through on the same line because Deck really do... He's doing the most right now. Because he's really like a one-man band.
Yes, Deck is such a fucking MVP and such an underrated character. Oh, he truly does. Like, they could not do half of the shit that they would want to do or know half the things that they know without him.
Because he's patching all the calls.
I don't know what Flynn's doing. Flynn's just existing.
He is being Little Lord Flynn.
Lord Flynn hanging out, vibing.
Little Lord duties.
Yes, but Deck's like, da-na-na-na-na. Like, he be typing.
MVP. MVP. As Bryce is fighting her way through the or to the meadows to help the humans, she asks for backups at the Mortal Gates. Rune urges her to get into one of the shelters, and Sabine says that there is no backup for Asphodel Meadows. Bryce pleads, saying that there are children and babies, and whenever I listen to this on the graphic audio... Snaps to the voice actors and like the special effects people because oh my gosh, like
did listening they put baby to cries the... in there.
No, but like you can hear
okay,
because she's not there yet. I'm sure if she was, then probably for that extra emotional damage. But like you can hear everything happening in the background as Bryce is on the phone, and like it sounds like she's truly on a phone and she's like screaming and pleading. And good job to the voice actors. You guys crushed it. I was effectively damaged.
Effectively.
It hurt in the moment, but I thank you for it in the long run. But Bryce is pleading for backup, and essentially the room is falling silent because they're saying that there's no one else to dispatch. However, a deep male voice answers the call and says, I'm coming, Bryce. Hold on. We are all coming. And that voice... belongs to Ethan Hullstrom.
Listen, good job, Ethan.
This book made me happy because it reminds me all of the good of Ethan. And I loved him in this chapter.
Yes. Yes, and also every time I reread it, I'm like, do you get redemption? Do you? Why did Bryce... have to literally run into a horde of demons for you to not be a fucking asshole.
I think it's... in the beginning of the chapters, yes, no like Ethan, but also... I mean, he was dealing with his own trauma and probably wasn't getting help for it. Bryce was dealing with her trauma and definitely didn't get help for it, because her only help was luckily that one spontaneous instant where Juniper answered her call. Mm-hmm. But, like, Bryce didn't do therapy. I doubted Ethan did it. Juniper did. I doubt Fury did. But everyone deals with their grief in their own way, whether it's a healthy way or not. But also, like, they also did not give each other the platform to talk to one another, because, like, after a while, Ethan was trying to reach out to Bryce after everything went down, and then after the sailings, Ethan said, you know what, actually, don't talk to me. Don't come by my house. And then that went years, so maybe if everyone went to therapy, it'd be a different story.
Everyone go to therapy. Crescent City therapy.
Everyone get help. Your mental health Everybody matters. Everybody needs it. So maybe if they had the platform to get healthy help, sure. But right now, they're making up for it. They're looking out for one another. So Sabine tells Ethan to stay where he is and that he is disobeying direct orders. But before she could finish, because I'm like, you're not Alpha or Prime, so sit down. Ethan hangs up, and so does every other member of his pack. They all disconnect the line from Sabine and go with them.
Good job, finally.
Because they don't need Sabine's approval.
Nobody needs Sabine.
So, the pack technically could reach the Meadows in 3 minutes if they ran fast enough. On the way, so the wolves are on their way, but they also have the jackals, the coyotes, the wild dogs, hyenas, dingoes, and foxes all fell into line with Ethan to run for the Meadows and save the defenseless. And
iconic.
This next quote from the book I love. And the book says, it was who they were, who they'd always been, defenders of those who could not protect themselves, defenders of the small, the young, shifters of true animal, that true lay etched in the soul of every canine. Ethan Holstrom sprinted towards Avondale Meadows with the weight of that history behind him, burning in his heart. He prayed he wasn't too late. And that, to me, sounds like alpha material.
Mm-hmm. Just You're not saying. Wrong. I do like that they all came together to, run together.
It was such an iconic moment.
It was also an iconic moment.
There's a song I discovered on Spotify that, like, every time I listen to it, it reminds me more of, like, Bryce, but it gives, like, very Crescent City vibes. So if anyone's looking for a song that's like, what's a song to listen to that reminds me of Crescent City? Listen to, it's called Running with the Wolves, and it's by Aurora in all caps. Such a good song. Specifically reminds me of Bryce and, like, Danica and, like, her remembrance of the pack, but, like,
okay.
Top tier song.
I will listen to it. I would play it,
but copyright.
Yes. Just go, you guys can go listen to it. All right, here we go. Chapter 85.
So, Bryce tells herself just a little more, just a little longer, because she knows herself that she needs to continue to fight, but she's also getting tired. Mm-hmm. Bryce runs out of ammo as she is getting attacked by a demon, and as they are brawling, Bryce struggles to defend herself with just a knife left. However, as she is fighting, a sword from a bodyguard of the Viper Queen plunges into its body. Bryce looks around to find that the fae guards of the Viper Queen and the canines have finally come to join the battle. Back at the summit, though, however, Fury and Co. are still waiting on her helicopter to arrive, and as they're waiting, Sandriel comes back into the room to inform everyone that they are to remain at the summit and that the Asteria are sending help to the city. So everyone's kind of like, yay, the Asteria are helping, but also like, we still need to go.
Yeah.
like we still need to be there. Mm-hmm. But they do, in the meantime, go back to watching the monitor to keep track of the seconds and They go back to watching the monitor and keep track of the seconds that Bryce and Ethan have until all the shelters go on lockdown. As they're running, Ethan is struggling. He has a massive gash on his side, and Bryce grabs his hand as they run together. And honestly, Hunt doesn't even know how Ethan is running with the condition that he's in.
Yeah.
The wolves of the pack were losing their grip on the door, and one by one, until just one wolf remained holding the door open. And it very clearly was not going to be enough room for the both of them. So Bryce looks at Ethan's face with sorrow and determination, and Hunt, knowing Bryce, knows that look, and his heart drops as Bryce falls back a few steps, and she uses the remaining of her face strength to shove Ethan Holmstrom forward, saving Connor's little brother.
That girl.
Like, I'm like, thank you for being selfless, but also, like, Bryce, no.
I know. She had to do it, though. Can you imagine, though, like, what her life would have been if she did the opposite? Can you imagine what would have happened if Ethan did that to her?
Oh, Bryce would have lost it. Bryce.
Oh, dude.
Mm-mm. His contact would have been deleted for sure.
Immediately. She'd been so upset.
Bryce shoves Ethan forward, and Ethan twists towards Bryce, eyes filled with rage, despair, and grief, and he tries to reach out his hand for her, but he is too late, and the door to the shelter closes with a boom that is echoed around the city, and Bryce slams into the door, not able to stop herself. Hunt takes in Bryce's look and notices that for once, Bryce truly does not know what she's going to do. Mm-hmm. And this part from the graphic audio also hurt. Because we're back to Bryce's point of view, and she says that someone, most likely Ethan, was banging on the door, almost like they could claw their way through and create an opening for Bryce. And you can hear it.
in the graphic audio?
You can hear the banging.
Ooh.
And it hurt. That hurt.
Yeah.
I was not okay during this chapter.
I don't know if graphic audio is for me. Like, honestly.
Listen, it hurts in the moment, but I love the emotional damage. It hurts, but I still say thank you at the very end. Like, I think whenever Rebecca makes an announcement for book 4, I think whenever I do my, instead of doing like a reread, I think I might do a re-listen and listen to the graphic audio for the first time.
Yeah.
That's gonna hurt. Especially for sure the end of book 1. I'm not ready. And then also, allegedly, next spring, the first graphic audio for, I believe, just Throne of Glass is supposed to be released. Yeah, and if they do that entire series, I am also not going to be okay. I'm going to enjoy it, and I'm going to applaud the voice actors, but I'm going to be in pain.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, it hurts
for me,
but I'm going to say thank you. I tell myself every single time I, like, listen to something, and I'm like, maybe my brain's just a masochist.
Maybe I am.
Because, like, even, like, I personally always recommend Assassin's Blade first if you're going to read Throne of Glass. If you want that impactful emotional damage, then do it, which I, again, it hurts in the moment, but I enjoy and respect a story more if I am affected deeply by it, and if I go days on days still thinking about the book and the choices that were made. And even Oh, what's the book that someone just finished and they're recommending a bunch? I think it's the Insatiable series.
I've heard that going around a lot.
I heard that one's also very emotionally damaging, which I'm, again, like, if there's emotional damage, I will sign up for it. I'm going to hate it in the moment, but I'm like, but you know what?
Yeah.
That actually was really good.
I got something. I don't know if it's actually emotional damage or not, but I thought that you would be, like, so proud of me. Because I bought this bad boy.
Can can that be our next not deep dive? Deep dive? Like, not deep dive, yes. But, like, we talk about it?
And then, they only had these two, so I don't think that, I think I'm missing some. Pretty sure I am.
I mean, that's book one and book two, so you're doing great.
Oh, I'm on the right track. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool, cool. So, for those who are not on the video, but if you're, like, listening on Spotify, I bought The Cruel Prince and The Wicked King by Holly Black. I actually went to this, like, really cool, like, one of the oldest bookshops. It's in Florida. I was on my way down to the Keys, and there's this super, super old bookshop. And I went in there, and they had, like...
Ooh, wait, which one was it called?
Called the Old Florida Bookshop. Ooh. And it's in, like, Fort Lauderdale area. So I was on my way to the Keys. Fort Lauderdale,
that wasn't the Keys. I thought you were, like, no, talking
on my, I was on my Keys. Way, I was driving to the Keys. I was driving to the Keys, and my husband was like, I want to take you to this bookstore. Aww. And it had, like, wild stuff in it. Like, crazy books from... century, like, maps and books and all these things, and it had two romantic books, and I bought them both. It also had this, like, really cute edition of Pride and Prejudice, which I was like, this is, like, the cutest thing ever, so I bought them both of these. But, like, guess how much I got this book for?
$8.
Oh, damn, it was $10.
Dang. Close.
But I was like, that's pretty good prices. But also there was this cat there. And I got to pet the cat the whole time. So I would, like, pick a book, and then I would pet the cat, and then I'd pick a book, and then I'd pet the cat.
It's like a reward. It's a double reward.
It was, yes. So, and I was there before they opened, and so the cat was, like, lying at the door, and he was lying on top of money. Because you can, like, buy books that are outside and just, like, put money in the little window. So he's, like, lying on a $5 bill. And he was, like, pawing at the door, like, hello, help, let me out. The real MVP. Yes. So I knew you'd be proud of me.
I am. I wouldn't say The Cruel Prince is emotionally damaging, but for a YA, because I'm not a YA girly. Like, I have not read, aside from The Cruel Prince, I don't think I've read a YA since, like, middle school? Late middle school? Early high school? It's been a hot minute. Like, that's why I haven't read Rising of the Reaping, I think is what it's called, and also Ballad of Songbird and Snakes. Like, I haven't read that, because it's been literally since... sixth grade, since I read The Hunger Games. I'm just like, I don't know if I can do it. Like, I've heard that they're really good books, but I'm just like, I don't know. And I didn't go into The Cruel Prince thinking to be affected and love the story as much as I did. But it still gives that, like, every other fantasy book, the last couple of chapters, buckle up. Yeah. Which I enjoyed. I was like, at least it has that, and it's good, but I'm so excited. And you get to, I'm gonna read it. As you're reading it, as you go, like, through the books, you can rewatch our past episodes with our, this is your book boyfriend of the day, and you can relive my anger with me. Maybe.
About you more, why you're so mad.
Yeah. Angry and
fine. We'll see. We have very different book boyfriends, you and I. Like...
I mean, we both agree on Lorcan, so there's that.
We agree on Lorcan, I think that's a win. We disagree on Kale, and Dorian's, like, okay to me.
Kale, like, is not book boyfriend, he is my book child. So, like, it is a rite of passage to be annoyed at him, but then, like, once Tower of Dawn comes around, like, you gotta hold his hand, and, like, he figures out that he's wrong. You gotta gentle parent him. He is not book boyfriend. He is book toddler, book baby, book friend. Rowan, to me, is my lavender husband. Like, I love his and Aelin's story and their love for one another, but I'm just like, Dorian's right there. And he needs help running a kingdom, so I'm like, I gotta go. Whoa, almost dropped my water.
Yeah, I'm Lorcan for life.
Lorcan's a close second. Listen, if Dorian wasn't there, and if he didn't have that tragic backstory, then I'd be with Lorcan.
The emotional damage. There we have it.
Sorry, don't even. I don't know, honestly, if I have a book boyfriend for Crescent City. Now that I think about it.
What?
I know.
How?
I don't know.
I don't know either. What do you mean?
What do you mean? Because, like, I have love for Hunt, but I feel like Hunt is, like, he's not a toddler. I guess he's, like, friend. I feel like I have, like, more of a protective thing where I'm, like, don't talk to him, don't touch him. He's been through a lot. Let him watch TV and watch Sunball and be happy. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, like, Hunt, protector. Ethan, I love him in the moment. Mm-hmm. As we're going through the story, I feel like his story could have been written so differently. Like, especially, like, rereading this moment, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, Ethan's awesome. But then we continue. Same mm-hmm. with Therian, for me. Like, don't even get me started. I'm sorry.
But, like, Rune Danit exists. So I just don't know.
So, with the case of Rune Danit, it's like, Dorian is my book boyfriend. Well. Dorian. How did I do this? I'll promote him for right now, for the sake of the thing. I'm gonna say, like, Dorian, book husband. We live life, we're married, we have a future. Cassian, book boyfriend.
Okay, we agree on Cassian, at least. Rune,
he's a side piece. He's a homewrecker. Like, I still appreciate him, I love him, but he's, like, not boyfriend, not husband. He's friend. I think out of all of the MMCs in Crescent City, Rune is the closest to book boyfriend. I guess he'd be like a Lavender husband too for me. I don't know.
I'm waiting for you to decide.
I'm going to say Rune can be like Rowan, and they are both my Lavender husbands, to where if I had to, I would. Because I don't think I would choose Hunt. Definitely not Therian. Book one Ethan, maybe. I think book one Ethan would be Lavender husband.
I would not choose book one Ethan.
Listen, mm-mm. He's rallying up the dogs.
Yeah, and the last chapter.
Because he didn't after- go to therapy. Mm-mm. He didn't go to therapy. Listen. If they had healthy healing, maybe it would have been...
Do you know who also has been through, like, a ton? Like, literally getting his wings chopped off and still...
And that's why I'm, like, a protector of Hunt. But... Mm-mm. Ethan kind of does go through it a little bit in the third book. Not as much as Hunt. He doesn't go through it as much as the others. But he
does go through it later on. But, like, mm-hmm. right now...
I mean, even, like, he lost his brother. Who was mm-hmm. his entire family. Because he doesn't have any, like... Connor was it. He doesn't have parents. He has a
whole pack.
But, like, the last living familial relative was Connor. Like, the pack is a family in the sense...
Yeah, Hunt has Hunt lost his mom and his lover. I'm not lover.
Comparing traumas, but I'm also saying don't still have respect for Ethan's trauma. Because no one's trauma is equal. Everyone's trauma is different. And they all, because, ooh.
Girl, if we're going to talk about trauma,
don't even get me started. With book three, because me and Bryce, we're gonna throw hands in book three. Because of, don't even get me started.
You're wild. This is wild. I can't. Okay. All right. All right.
This is 8:30 Madison.
Oh my god. 8:30 at night Madison is insane. She is another level. She's sober too. Are you?
Listen, we're rocking with the ginger ale, okay?
She's got ginger ale. She is on fire tonight.
Bryce decides that the best thing she could do at this moment for now is to probably race back to her apartment, which has enchantments on it that could protect her and others that she found along the way. But it's kind of 20 blocks away. So a different idea forms in Bryce's head, and she races her way through the city grid, and as she's running and slaying the demons as she goes, she knew that in this moment that she was truly alone. Because essentially, if the Ox and 33rd, whatever the rest of them, did their job, everyone should be in the shelters, and everyone should be protected. Unfortunately, except for Bryce.
Right.
Which, honestly, like, after working with heavy machinery, you think that they would have, like, an emergency button to be like, hold on, and then resume.
Yeah, you know? Something.
Like a safety feature.
They did not think that through.
Anywho, but we're going to finish out the last short chapter, which is chapter 86. So, Bryce, everyone watches as she makes it to the old square, and once she gets there, she is sitting on the ground, and everyone believes that Bryce is giving up, and that she is truly out of ideas. However, Bryce pulls out her phone, and she decides to call Hunt, and Hunt's phone is ringing, and Sandril lets him answer it. Thank goodness. That's like the one decent thing she does. But Bryce essentially tells Hunt to tell her mom that she loves her and to tell Randall that he was the only father that ever mattered. Tell Fury she is sorry she lied and that she would have told her the truth eventually. She tells him to tell Juniper to thank her for the night on the roof, that she had stopped her from jumping so she could be there to help today, and that she'd been close to jumping, and that Juniper's call and the fact that she stayed on the phone until she got there had helped her. She then tells him to tell Brune that she forgives him. She probably also added his contact back at this moment, too.
Yeah, she probably did.
And that she forgave him a long time ago, but just didn't know how to tell him the truth. And hid it because she loves him and didn't want to take anything away from him. And then she finally tells Hunt that she was waiting for him. And as she says this, she's pointing to her heart, and she tells him that she forgives him for anything, or for everything. And with that, she hangs up the phone, and she runs towards the gate.
The end.
And what a way to end an episode, because we still got a whole lot of hoopla left.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes down, honestly. That's insane. We're, like, so close again to being done. And, again, this is, like, where all of it comes together. Like, where Sarah's, like, connects all of her dots. So, things be happening. That's wild. And so, it's interesting because I actually don't... As we get to the end of the book, again, all the dots are being connected. So, I actually don't have anything for theories and lore. Because all of our questions are being answered.
Yeah, I feel like with these chapters at the end, it's, again, just, like, pointing out the things that we didn't notice. Like, even, I think I made, like, just a look towards the camera one episode. I can't remember which one it is, but there's, like, a specific episode whenever, it might even be, like, the first or second, whenever Danica opens the storage closet to store her things and her clothes before she goes showers and change.
And she puts the sword in there.
Well, not only the sword, but I make the, like, a nod, or I know I did something to, like, that's the first chapter where they're like, oh, and there's, like, this junk and a gasoline thing. Like, why is there gas
in here? Yeah, we talked about it, too. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's so funny. There's just, like, gasoline. But, like,
we find out and we know about it within, like, literally chapter one or two.
Yeah, a lot of it's, like, full circles, like, the gasoline, the sword... Like, all of the things she lays out for us, and then we don't really bring it back into play mm-hmm. into like way later. I feel like that'd be so hard to do as an author, is to like lay the groundwork and lay details that have to come back. And I feel like she does it for most things. Like, there's not a lot of information. I mean, there's a couple things where you're like, you really don't need this. There's very few things, but I feel like as an author, I'd probably be like, and I want to put this info in there. You don't need to worry about it. And I want to put this in there, but you don't need to worry about it. I feel like that would be like my downfall as an author.
I feel like it's kind of just as you're writing, because I know I've like started two things, and like one is like contemporary, so there's nothing to think. And then one of them is like a dark romance, and there's like notes that I have where I'm like, ooh, I want this idea to happen, and like at the very beginning, but have it be a misdirect for something. And then someone made a post where
Are you reading or are you writing?
Writing.
You're writing a book?
I started to, and I haven't touched them, because I've learned the hard way that if you're going to write something, then you truly cannot read. Because that's going to distract from everything. So I think I have 5 or 8 chapters of, like, 2 things, and I just haven't touched it in forever. And then someone made a post today that was, like, a fun, like, here's points that you have, build your own FMC. So I, like, created a story, and I was like, my FMC is this, this, and this. And she's like, honestly, I want that book. And I'm like, maybe I'll make another work in progress that I just never touch again. Because I'm like, honestly, that's kind of a sick story. But it'd be fantasy, and fantasy takes a lot of brain power.
It does. Yes. It does. I have no idea what it takes to be an author. I'm learning. Not because I'm doing it. I'm just learning. I'm learning all the things. I don't know if it's something that I could personally do. But good on you. Proud of you. I want to read it.
Only one person's read it so far, what I have. Because I'm just like, is this stupid? Is this silly? Because it's also, like, I feel like a lot of readers, you either grow up on Wattpad or AO3, and I grew up on Wattpad, and I, like, after Silver Flames, I, like, started learning what AO3 was, but it's more confusing to me just since I didn't start on it to navigate, but, like, that's where I got all my Gwenreal fanfics and a lot of Illusion fanfics, but it's, like, I feel like things are decent, but there's some things I've written, and I'm, like, is that too Wattpad-y? Because I know, like, sometimes Wattpad and, like, fanfics can be a little bit too descriptive on, like, what things look like and what characters are wearing. But I'm, like, also in the sense, I'm, like, well, if hypothetically, like, you never know when something's going to blow up. And, like, if someone wants to cosplay or, like, dress as a character, then they want those details. So I always, like, write a note. I'm, like, ask Julia. Is this silly?
Yeah. That's fair. Oh my gosh, Madison's writing a book, guys. That's nuts.
If I ever do anything with it, it's gonna be years. Because, again, I have learned that if you do write, even from, like, some of my friends who have, like, written and just self-published things, like, your reading challenges and scores, they go down.
That's true. That's fair. Well, if you do it, you do it. If you don't, then that's okay, too. No big deal. All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Goodish Girls. We will see you guys next week with more in-depth conversation of Crescent City.
Yes.
No theories in the world today. We're to the end.
Just appreciation.
Just appreciation. A nod.
Can't get enough of The Goodish Girls? Follow us on social media for sneak peeks at our upcoming episodes and bonus content.